What's for dinner? What's for dinner? What's for dinner? Talking about what's ever on their minds. Talking about what's ever on their minds.
Oh my goodness. Oh my damn. Hello, everybody.
We're going ham.
We're going ham, everybody. Welcome, welcome, one and all. I should have circus music playing at this point. Welcome, guys, to another wonderful, fun-filled episode of What's for Dinner. And today, I got to tell you, honey, are you excited?
I am freaking just boiling out of my seat here with excitement.
I'm excited.
My wife is excited. Our guest is excited. I'm excited because of our guest.
I'm excited because of you being excited because of me.
So this is just an excitement clusterfuck right now.
I will take the reins, Levy.
Oh, I got the reins.
You're on them.
I'm riding. I am, as Jimmy Schubert would say, I'm fucking the cat. You just told the tale.
Beautiful.
nice. Guys, tonight we got. I'm very excited that you're able to do this, man. Very incredibly funny comedian, actor. I think we've known each other off and on for a few years.
I'll see you at the improv from time to time, and I'll say, Flip, what have you been up to?
And I'll say, not as much as you, apparently.
No, you go, I got a podcast, come on down, and here I am.
Guys, very special guest, Maz Jobrani is here, everybody.
Woo!
Oh, my God. Now they're thinking, who is this guy?
Oh, the people know who you are.
Oh, some people, but not all the people.
You have I'm not just going to even isolate it to Middle Eastern comics as far as the comedy umbrella.
Yeah,
you are very well known in the business.
Yeah, I'm trying to I'm that guy that I think some people like. I've got a fan base, a lot of Middle Easterners, a lot of white liberal people, because we did the Axis of Evil comedy tour.
Right,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was in 07, right?
That was in 07, and that came out on Comedy Central, and I think a lot of people saw that, and we got a lot of good press. So that's kind of where some people know me from. Then I'm known in the more urban world, amongst blacks and Latinos, mm-hmm. for the movie Friday After Next, where I played. I mean, that's big. The Friday movies,
yeah.
The
yeah,
Ice Cube
absolutely.
Movies are big. So,
absolutely.
So it was weird. Like the movie, I was in the third one called Friday After Next. I played the donut shop owner named Molly.
Okay.
And it was funny was suddenly I was getting recognized by blacks and Latinos everywhere I went. They'd be like, yo, Molly, what's up? So I've got these little pockets of recognition, and then I'll get introduced, like you were just saying, at the comedy store. We're all friends, and we know what the other guy's doing or what they've done, and so when we introduce each other, we'll say, hey, he's done this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I feel like I go up on stage and people are looking at me like, don't know who that guy is.
Aww.
Or they'll say, I know that guy, but I don't know where from.
Do you prefer that? Do you like still having that kind of anonymity in the business?
I like, it's not even the whether I like, I mean, I don't care one or the other. It's just once in a while, like Bobby Lee's a great example. Bobby Lee will introduce me with very nice introductions. I follow him a lot at the Comedy Store.
Mm.
So he'll be like, this next guy, he's a world-renowned comedian. He world, he's been in film, television. So I'm thinking, as an audience member, they were sitting there going like, oh, Jerry Seinfeld is about to come on. Or they're thinking, oh, well, who is it, is it Chappelle? Chappelle's here. And then they go, Maz Jobrani. And then I think a handful of people are like, oh, yeah, that guy. And then some people are like, never seen him. So it becomes an interesting thing that I always play off of, because I'm going, half of you guys are like, what the hell? Mm. And then sometimes I have jokes about the TV shows I've been on that got canceled. So it kind of leads into that a little bit.
Right.
I gotta say, my coworker was stoked that you were going to be on the show, because he's been to five or six of your personal shows
there
to see
it.
You.
Is he Middle Eastern?
Yes.
There you have it. Oh, in the Middle Eastern world, as Sam Tripoli likes to say, I'm the Persian Elvis, otherwise known as, otherwise
fucking great.
Otherwise known as Pelvis. I'm Pelvis.
Yes.
Pelvis, yeah.
Yes.
It's funny, one time, just talking about the Comedy Store and stuff, literally, Eddie Murphy, he would come down and watch the main room on Tuesday night, Black Comedy Night, Tripping on Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
And the original room is going on with regular Comedy Store comics. And it's kind of like a, how it is, the original room on a Tuesday is maybe the capacity is 200, maybe have 30 or 40 people in there.
Right.
So it's like a workout night.
Yeah, right.
And Pauly Shore is about to go up, and somebody tells him, hey, Eddie's in the main room. So Pauly Shore knows Eddie Murphy from when he was a kid. You know, when he used to come to the Comedy Store. He goes over, starts talking to Eddie, whatever, yada, yada. I'm supposed to follow Pauly. And then Pauly goes up and does a set. Oh, and Pauly tells Eddie, would you come watch my set? So Eddie Murphy's sitting in the back of the room watching Pauly's set. He left the main room, came to the other, the smaller room, to watch Pauly's set.
Okay.
Towards the end of Pauly's set, now I'm supposed to go up next. Towards the end of Pauly's set, Eddie Murphy gets up and walks back into the main room. He's basically seen it as almost over. He's left. And then Pauly's up on stage, and, you know, his mother owns the club. So he goes, he's like, all right, guys, that's my time. Listen, we have a special guest in the house. He's a superstar. He hasn't done stand-up in a long time, and this is going to be his comeback, blah, blah, blah. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Eddie Murphy. Total silence. People are like, what? They're looking around, what? Eddie, come on, where are you, Eddie? And nothing. Eddie's left by now.
Right.
So then somebody, I don't know if I say it or somebody from the back, one of the employees goes, Eddie went to the other room. And he's like, and he tells one of the employees, like one of the younger comics, well, go get him. And he's like, what do you want me to say? He's like, tell him Pauly wants you to come do a set. So this poor guy goes, and then he comes back, and he's like, he's not coming. He's like, what? He goes, what did you tell him? He said, I told him that Pauly's asked for you to come.
And this is all being yelled.
This is all being yelled. Pauly's on the stage waiting. We're all waiting. And I'm supposed to go next.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm just waiting. I'm like, oh, great. I guess. And I'm, personally, I want to see Eddie Murphy. You know, I'm like, I'm like, bump me. Let Eddie Murphy come up. And then the other comic, the young comic comes in. He's Eddie's not coming. Well, what'd you say? I said I told him that Pauly says to come to the other room. Like probably the way it was worded was a little wrong too. Probably was like, hey, Pauly Shore says coming. You know, it wasn't like, hello, Mr. Murphy.
Right.
If you would like to, Mr. You know, Pauly has asked if I would ask you to. You know, it wasn't like that. I think it was probably like Pauly wants you in the other room. So he's like, what'd he say? He's like, he's not coming. So I'm like, oh, you know, and then Pauly's like, oh, man, too bad. He was going to be here. He was here, guys. Da, 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 da. All right, well, who is it? And then they're like, it's Maz Jobrani. He's like, oh, well, he's kind of Eddie Murphy for the Middle Eastern people. And then I go up, and it's funny, like nobody knew who I was. And I said, guys, I got to be honest with you. I was back there. I was rooting for Eddie myself. And I go, I feel like the ugly girl at the bar.
Aww.
And we were all about to get laid by the hot chick, and she left. And the lights came on, and here I am, you know? And so that was
you're the closing time comic.
I was the closing time. I'm just rolling into all these stories, but it's true.
Please.
Closing time comics. Another time in the main room at the Comedy Store, I think it was like a Friday or a Saturday night, there was some event going on that week in L.A. called like the Black Film Festival. So geared towards black people. Black films, yada, yada. I've never heard of it ever since, never had heard of it before. But it was some big event, and they decided to do their closing night at the Comedy Store main room. So, wow. Again, I'm in the original room on a Friday night doing my thing, and the main room is just, you know, it's packed. You know, they've done a good job of bringing all these people from the festival to the main room. And I guess this is when Eddie Griffin was hot.
Okay.
And they have said Eddie Griffin is going to close the night. Well, whoever the organizers were, they didn't tell Eddie Griffin that he was going to close the night.
Oh, shit.
So he got pissed at them. Like, maybe he wanted them to, like, pay. Maybe they sold tickets using his name. I don't know. But they promoted it as Eddie Griffin. So I see him, like, in the hallway going, like, motherfucker, can't, you know, have me closing the show, not tell me, you know, da 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 da. So he's pissed. He's not going to do it.
Right.
So whoever the booker was comes over to me. They're like, we need a comic to close the show. You want to do it? And I'm like, wait, they're expecting Eddie Griffin? And he's like, yeah. And I go, but you just want me to go out there in front of this black crowd? He's like, yeah. I'm like, whatever, let's try it.
Oh, okay. My God.
I was like, what do you got to lose? And I went on, it's funny, because they're like, all right, ladies and gentlemen, your headliner for the night. Now, people have no idea who I am. Blah, 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 blah. Maz Jobrani, as I come up, like, you know, main room seats, like, almost 400 people. I think when I come up, like, about 200 people got up and left. And then people are just walking out. And like, a group of, like, maybe, like 50 people towards the front just hung out. And it was funny because the first thing I said, I was like, thank you guys. You know, I was like talking to people. Thank you guys, you know, for coming. You know, I work with the valet. We've got your cars coming up. And then I turned to the other guys and I said, you know, this is the end of a film festival. I go, I feel like I'm the credits at the end of the film and I'm rolling.
Oh,
and
no.
You guys are just, but you know, and it was funny. I stuck in there and had a good set.
I was going to say, sometimes those shows turn out to be the best ones.
Love them.
Yeah.
I love them.
Like I was, I just got back last night. I was doing a college run up in the Northeast, and I ended up doing this. I went back to this school in Penn State Wilkes-Barre, uh-huh. and the last time I was there, it was a. Have you done colleges?
Yeah.
Did you ever have to do nooners?
I don't think I've ever done a nooner. I've done cafeterias, but yeah. I've never done a nooner.
Well, this was a nooner in like a student lounge.
Oh Jesus!
Yeah, and the last time I was there, it was awful. Was just like nobody was paying attention. They had like TVs on. There was ping pong tables, pool tables. Yeah, this guy came through and threatened to kick me out of the school. So I was dreading going back to this place. And then I went this past time. It turned out to be fucking great.
Yeah.
Like it was a lot less kids, but it turned out to be a more intimate, fun show.
Well, listen, if they're an attentive audience but small, that's the best because they're sitting there. I mean, that's why I love the Comedy Store so much, because you get that on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, you know, usually sometimes even on a Thursday, where it's just the smaller crowd.
I did it last time in the main room. I had 30 people there, and they were the best crowd I've ever had at the main room.
Right?
Best crowd. And they were just all right in the front, loving every second. So,
Because what happens is then the stakes are lower.
Lower, totally. No pressure.
And you just call a spade. You know, like a lot of times I'll walk out, and it's not like it's... a pre-written joke, but like if I feel it, I'll be like, guys, we could have done this at my house, or like I feel like I'm at the whatever, and I'll just call it like I see it. I look out in the audience and I'll be like, oh great. Anyway, I did one recently where Jamie Masada at the Laugh Factory does Friday nights. He does the clean show. Okay. Friday first show is the clean show, and I showed up and it was like 30, 40 people, and they weren't really a good audience. The energy was very weird. Mm-hmm. And I just went up and I was like, how many people are here for the clean show? How many people know this is the clean show? No hand went up. I was like, how many people want us to cuss? Everyone starts clapping. And I was like, I don't even cuss in my set, but just for you guys, fuck, fuck, fuck. And I just started going. And then Jamie was in the back and I was like, Jamie, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? He's like, starts ducking in the back. I was like, what are you doing a clean show for? Nobody knows it's a clean show.
But on a Friday, no less. Do a clean show on Tuesday.
He wanted the early show to be clean show. I mean, somebody probably gave him the idea. And maybe there was one couple there who maybe even knew. I don't think they did. But it's just funny. I mean, what I'm saying is about, you know, having the small audience and being able to call it what it is, you know?
Yeah, it's like you said, it's just a lot more... Intimate. Less pressure, and
you could talk to them like almost individually. You're like, hey,
it's great. You. And you know what it is? I think a big part of what we do is, I think the more you do it, you start realizing the big part of what you do is, if you can be comfortable enough to just start out, or at any point, just like, you know, call a spade a spade, call the room like you see it. You know, somebody told me, my friend Omid Jalili, who's a Iranian English comic, he's really big over there. He was on the TV show Whoopi.
Oh, yeah.
And then he was in Gladiator. He's just a great guy, does a lot of work. He said he went and saw Seinfeld at the O2 Center in London, you know, like 15,000, 16,000 people.
Jesus.
And he said what was brilliant was, he goes, he spent his first few minutes talking about the trouble of getting into the O2 because there was so much traffic. He said, the first few minutes were about getting into the O2 Center. Which he said everyone there related to, because 16,000 people just went through it.
Yeah.
So he just, it wasn't set material. It was like, I had to do this and that, whatever. I don't know what it was. But it was brilliant because he said he just had them at that point.
Oh, they were comfortable with him because they were like, yeah, we feel like you do. Yeah.
Well, I think that's so, like, I think that reigns true no matter where you go. If you're playing like a huge venue or just little clubs, if you can open up with something local and relatable, it definitely lays the foundation for a very friendly. And I think very personal show, because the audience is like, oh my God, this guy knows about our town, or he references this, or you know.
And it helps you land as well, because it makes you, it's not just like going up and going like, I just broke up with my girlfriend, you know.
Right.
You know, it's like, hey, whatever, I, you know, Miami Improv, if you've ever done Miami Improv. Hey, you know, I went to get a burger and ended up in a crack house. Like, I mean, like literally, it's like two blocks away. It's a crack house.
Yeah.
Like, it's the weirdest kind of setup there.
Oh, I know. I'm from down there.
Okay, so. Coconut Grove is weird.
Yeah. Oh, very weird. You go out of that one little area.
CVS is the cutoff. You can't go past the CVS.
Yes, exactly.
CVS is the cutoff. I think it's actually an aisle in CVS where it changes.
You go to the crack aisle, and it's official.
That's really strange.
Oh, my God. That's great.
I know. Whenever I'm in Miami, I do my opening joke is always about the guy selling the roses around Coconut Grove. It's a standard joke, but... it just same thing. It always kills.
They love it,
and brings them in. And like I said, it makes you more gives you a better in.
Yeah, I was there with Amir Kay. You know Amir Kay?
Oh yes, yeah.
He's
love
very
Amir.
Funny. Amir Kay is really funny, really strong comedian, and he did a bit at the top, which was really funny because I was staying in South Beach, so we're hanging out in South Beach a little bit, and he was talking about how he doesn't understand what people some of the Cubans are, you know, and the Dominicans say, because they talked about that, you know, hey, and he goes, they always say, oh yeah, you know, like listen. He goes, they tell you listen because they're about to bust out some shit that you're not gonna. He goes, oh yeah, and it starts going off, but in English, like he was like talking English, mm-hmm. but the crowd loved it because he was doing the accent so well. And it was, I think it's great to do that. You got to do that.
Where's your favorite place to play in the country?
I love DC. DC's great. They're very politically minded, and they seem to be really on top of everything. Like whatever you say, they're with you. Love DC, love the Bay Area, those are two of my favorites.
Do you play like the Midwest and everything too? Or?
Yeah, you know, I've done different shit. Look, first of all, I've done like colleges in places you would not imagine. Like I just did the University of Utah, which I was like, I asked the guy, I was like this, you know, white guy, like kind of like old, like not older, but like he used to be in the college, but he'd graduated, probably like in his late 20s, early 30s.
Okay.
Like this frumpy kind of white guy, and I was like, "Where'd you find me?" And he's like, "I was a big fan of Acts of Evil, and I'm head of the whatever student thing, and I brought you out." And I was like, "Okay, well, what kind of audience are we gonna have? Is it gonna be white, Middle Eastern? Is it what?" And he goes, "You know, we originally, you know, just wanted the students, but he goes, we put it out to the whole community."
Oh.
And then I had like, I guess there's a lot of Ethiopians. Like Ethiopians came. Like I've become like the immigrant comedian. Like all the immigrants come. So it was interesting. So like places like that, or like University of Memphis, or I just did one in Colorado College, which is a liberal school in the middle of Colorado Springs, which is a conservative place. And I think like I had every liberal white person in that city at my show.
Wow.
And they were coming up afterwards. We really enjoyed it. It was just great. What you're doing for humanity is great. I'm like, oh, thank you. So it's just,
See, that's great. So you're not you don't find yourself as far as audiences being limited as far as
no. You know, it's funny. The one time where I felt like, you know, I was a little worried. I went to I did Kansas City. I told my agent. I said, listen, I go. Let's try and build. Let's not just go to cities where I know. I'm willing to try a city that I don't know if I've got a fan base. Let's try it. So I did the Kansas City Improv. By the way, Kansas City was a lot of fun. It was a great city. But the club, I showed up and I don't have a fan base there. So like. You know, that whatever, it's like a 300-seater, and like the first night we had like 50 people or 60 people. Mm-hmm. So then like the next night they decided to do what's called papering the room, as mm-hmm. you know, which is they just like give out 2-for-1s or free tickets or whatever. So I show up, I'm looking as packed. I'm like, wow, I guess word got out. You know, they didn't tell me they papered the room. So I started my set and I look out in the audience. Literally, it's like white dudes with like trucker hats. And black people with like just like black people, like just like regular like husband wives, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not my fan base that I would imagine, like if I started talking about some Middle Eastern stuff that they're gonna get. So anyway, so I was just like, hey, let me do a few jokes so that they can relate to, and then go you know, then go into my set. And I went and the set went really well. So I thought, maybe these guys do know me. And then afterwards I realized, no, they didn't know me. It was just about, like, I had, like, guys coming up afterwards. Hey, man, really enjoyed the show. And I realized it's about how you present it sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I see some younger comics make that mistake. Sometimes, like, you know, you're used to playing rooms in L.A. So you think that everyone understands every reference.
Oh, totally.
Mm-hmm.
And totally. It's like, no, you gotta explain that. Like, even if you say West Hollywood, you're going to do a joke about a gay community and you say West Hollywood. People in Kansas City don't know what West Hollywood is.
Absolutely. Yeah. No.
So you got to paint that picture.
Yeah.
You know, so same thing for me. I just realized, hey, there's that people will get it if you just bring it to them from another angle.
Totally. Absolutely. Totally. I've seen a lot of like guys, because I feel bad for the guys who develop in LA.
Yeah.
Because they really, as far as their scope of reference, it's very limited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because like you said, West Hollywood, or I've seen guys on the road do jokes about Ralph's.
Yeah.
Or even like El Pollo Loco, or just things that are very local LA or even West Coast stuff.
Well, I think we all learn at some point. Like I did a show in London one time. It was like one of these like it was called The World Stands Up. It was a comedy show. It was kind of you know it's kind of like a premium blend kind of night of the Gotham kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So they had a bunch of comics all doing whatever 10 minutes. It was taped for a live audience, and at the time I used to do a joke where I would reference Asians. Well, now in America, Asians are Chinese, Koreans, Japanese. in England, Asians are Indians, like East Indians.
Oh, really?
And I learned that when I was there, like doing some, I did some joke, blah, blah, blah. You know, the stereotype here is Asians can't drive. That's a stereotype, right?
Yeah.
Well, over there, when you say Asians can't drive, they're like, why? What are you talking about? Why the Indians can't? We don't get that.
Interesting.
And then you go one step further. I actually asked them one time. I go, well, okay, so if I were to say Chinese people can't drive, is that a stereotype here? And they were like, nah, not really.
Huh.
It's not as prominent as it is here.
Isn't that interesting?
So then you sit there and you go, okay, I got to find a way. If I still want to do this joke, I got to find a way to deliver it. Or I just got to scratch it all together. Yeah. But I think we all run into that and we learn.
I was touring last year in Sweden.
Yeah.
I do some tours around Scandinavia. And I do this one joke where I reference Elmer Fudd.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking it's fucking Warner Brothers. Elmer I'm thinking Fudd. That's Universal.
Yeah, of course.
I do the bit. It sits there.
Yeah.
And afterward, I talk to the guy who booked me over there, promoter, and I go, do you know who Elmer Fudd is? And he goes, no.
That's funny.
Like, you never heard Bugs Bunny? He goes, no, I don't know what it is.
You would think that's absolutely international.
He's like,
yeah.
Elmer the Fortsville. Oh, yeah, Elmer Fortsville.
Oh, yeah.
Do you go out there with Barang? Is that who you go
out
with?
Yeah. You know Barang?
Yeah, I know Barang. I do. Yeah, I just shot my special in Sweden.
Did you really?
Yeah, it just came out, Showtime, shot it, and it was kind of what you were saying. I was a little worried about them getting everything. They got it. The only joke that did not go over as well, and then I edited it out of the special. I do this joke about being in a movie theater. I have young kids. Took my son to see Happy Feet 2. Took my son, nephew, and the neighbor's kid. Those three and me, we went. And it was a trip because I realized kids don't realize like movie theater etiquette. So at one point, one of the kids was like talking to me, but talking loud, not like whispering. And it was embarrassing. I'm looking around, I'm like, shut the fuck up. And he's just like, you know, why, no, blah, blah, blah. You know, and the joke I say, like, he's saying, like, why is the penguin dancing? I'm like, shut up. So the joke I do is basically I lead up to it, and at the very end I go, they were talking so much that even black people were like, stop talking.
Right? Nice.
Well, I did it in Sweden, and people didn't like, they didn't really get it.
They're like, what's a black person?
Yeah, well, actually, exactly. Yeah, black person? No, there was, at one of the shows, there was a black lady in the front. So I was like, maybe she'll get it. She didn't even get it. So you go, they don't have that same thing.
So that's
thing.
Not the same stereotype over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, I cut it out.
They're where not where, annoying and rude over there, apparently.
Yeah.
No, very nice. Actually, I love Swedish audiences.
Swedish audiences are great. Well, you know, listen, the whole black movie-going experience is something that I think is interesting because it's like, you know, like people say, like, go to the Magic Johnson theaters and see a movie that requires, like, a scary movie or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I mean, I think it becomes part of the movie, is the talking to the screen. And
yeah, it's almost like
it's
like seeing a Rocky Horror Show.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, hell no. You know, that
oh, don't go in there, baby.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you go, to experience it like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't go to be like, please be quiet, I'm paying attention.
Why you ain't running, girl? He's behind you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That'd be a great prank just to take a first date for a white couple to the Magic Johnson Theater.
That would be great, right?
To go see a movie.
I think I'm going to go see a movie. I'm not a big scary movie guy, but I might have to go see something just to experience it. I haven't done it in a while, I don't think.
I'm a big pussy when it comes to scary movies. Like, she loves them. Me too.
Yeah. I love the shit out of them.
But I'm saying go to the Magic Johnson Theater and experience it like that. Like, make it basically a fun.
I didn't even know that there was such a thing. Where is this theater?
Magic Johnson Theater? like Culver City-ish, kind of Baldwin Hills-ish, kind of. Just Google it, Magic Johnson Theater.
And it's primarily like a black audience that goes?
It's kind of in a black neighborhood.
Oh, so it's, wow. Okay, yeah.
You're going to get an urban audience. You can go check it out. There's the Magic Johnson Starbucks. Do you know the Magic Johnson Starbucks? He owns a Starbucks on the way to the airport, to LAX. You guys are Burbank, so you don't even deal with
it. Yeah, we're like, who? Who's Magic Johnson? Yeah.
Is this a magician?
Exactly.
Magique?
The Magic Johnson Starbucks, really? Yeah. Y'all want a frappuccino? Fuck that frappuccino, motherfucker!
Motherfuck!
Did I order extra whip on this, bitch?
Magic Johnson, there's a great 30 for 30 documentary. Have you watched any of those?
No.
30 for 30, ESPN documentary. I'm here to just
enlighten
you guys.
Enlighten
you guys.
My God.
Seriously.
ESPN has a great series of documentaries called 30 for 30. It's all about sports documentaries directed by different directors, like kind of well-known directors, what have you. They're amazing documentaries. They're all on Netflix now.
Okay.
So there's one called Magic Johnson. It's called The Announcement, when he came out and announced that he had AIDS. And it leads up to that. And it's just amazing because I remember being, I was actually studying abroad in Italy when that happened. And I remember, and first of all, it's great for taking you back to that time.
Which is already
great. Secondly, it's just great to like see the story and then see what happened afterwards. Like, he really, you know, they were afraid that he was going to die, and then and he's become this amazing businessman. I mean, he owns so much, and you see it in the movie. It talks about him like opening up the Starbucks, opening up. He's just bought all these franchises. He owns buildings.
He's like the Byron Allen with AIDS.
He's Byron Allen with AIDS. Exactly. Yeah, you're right. Byron Allen's another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Byron Allen owns, I think, the rights to Eddie Murphy's Delirious or Comedian or something.
Does he really?
Somebody told me he bought the rights.
No shit.
Holy crap.
He's a great businessman.
He does
I've
done like two or three. People go, hey, I saw you on Byron Allen's, what's it called? The
Comedy TV
or the
Comics Unleashed.
Comics Unleashed. And those things are like shot for nothing.
I know.
And they just air all over the world.
I actually did a Comedy TV. I recorded it, what was it, almost 2 years ago. It's summer of...
The stand-up?
Summer of 2011.
Yeah. I did the stand-up too.
Yeah. It still hasn't aired yet.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what he's doing with those.
Yeah. I got a copy of it, but
He's waiting for us to like hit, and then he's going to go do a deal with Comedy Central.
There you go.
Like, here, I got his next special right here. It's 7 minutes.
Nice.
It's a killer 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Actually, did you... Because I've done three of us. I've done Comedy TV, Comics Unleashed, and Who Wants to Date a Comedian?
I didn't do Who Wants to Date a Comedian.
Even though
she and I
were already married,
yeah,
I actually got permission from her to do the show.
That's awesome.
Yeah, of course.
That's great.
And I ended up like making out with two hot chicks.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was a really great show.
He comes to me, he's like, I might have to kiss these girls. I'm like, are you getting paid? And he goes, yeah. I'm like, and you're acting. Come
wait, so so it's like you go on a date kind of a situation?
It's kind
of
like it's
Bachelor.
Like, it's like The Bachelor. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
It's like they edit it down to a half hour. It's like three chicks, one comic.
And where do they get the girls? Porn stars?
No, there's just the girls.
One of them I could swear was one of them. But one you picked was.
There's a lot of like really funny comics. Like, do you know Greg Wilson?
Yeah, Greg Wilson.
Yeah, of course. Greg did it. Kyle Cease, Judy Tenuta actually did it.
They had Greg making out with somebody.
I don't think anybody made out with Greg.
It's got to be messy. No, I love Greg, but making out with him, I don't know about that.
Probably go deaf.
Well, you know, one of my favorite things I've ever done in this business, I've been professionally doing acting and stand-up now for about 15 years. One of my favorite things I ever did, Jamie Masada had a show for DirecTV. It was called The Supreme Court of Comedy.
Right.
Man, I am so bummed that they canceled it. Don Marrero was the judge. You went head-to-head with another comedian as a lawyer. Oh. The people that came to do the case had signed off and said whatever Don Marrero decides is going to be the decision they will abide by. And so you get to pull out your Johnny Cochran shit. Man, I went up against Aries Spears. I destroyed him. It was so much fun because it was so much fun, man. Aries' client was this white guy who kind of sounded like Eminem. And like, he was kind of a black, you know, a wigger.
A wigger.
And he had, and my client was this black girl that he had like told, like, hey, let's go up to the Bay Area and spend a weekend, you know, where I'm from. But he said something like, my car doesn't work. And the guy worked for Federal Express. He's a FedEx delivery guy. He goes, I don't have a car. Can you drive? And the girl goes, my car is in the shop. If you lend me like $500, I could get it fixed. We can go. So the guy lends her the money, and then they go up to the Bay, and then the guy turns out to be a jerk, probably because she wasn't giving it up right away. So the guy like leaves her at his mom's house and goes to like some bars with some friends, and then when they get back, the guy's like, "You owe me $500," and the girl's like, "No, you kind of like, you know, that you gave that to me to drive you up there, and you disrespected me, blah blah blah. You're not getting it." And even the check, he'd written loan on there. So in reality, the guy should have gotten his money back.
Totally.
But he was such an idiot. It was so much fun because you got to do things like, you know, I was like, you know, Your Honor, you know, this man works for Federal Express. All day long, he goes around delivering his packages. And at night, he came home and tried to deliver his package to my client. And my client said, return to sender. This contains hazardous materials. I mean, it was just like left, right. And it was so much fun.
It's perfect.
And you don't even know. I got so excited. I was like, Your Honor, you know, this man would like the pussy. She said, no pussy for you, or something like that. To the point where, like, at the break, Jamie Masada comes over, buddy, can you know less pussy, buddy? You're saying too much pussy. I'm like, this is DirecTV. It's okay, man. It was so much fun, man.
I remember seeing promos for that.
Why didn't it? It sounds like it's a brilliant idea. It's a combo of everything.
I don't know why Comedy Central doesn't pick that up. That's like Comedy Central should be all over that.
You see, there's a new judge show every fucking other week. There's a new judge. Yeah. There's like 1,500 judge shows, and they wouldn't do that's a brilliant fucking idea.
Comedy Central sometimes, I think, drops the ball. I think it would be so much fun. It's great, like, stoner material. Because you know stoners watch Comedy Central.
Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
Bless you.
Oh, shit.
Here it
man.
Comes. That's all right. That's all right.
Do you want to take the pill now?
I think I got 20 more minutes. I can last. Yeah, let's do this.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
It's all right. Sorry.
We have an allergy to cats in the house.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And you know this house is full of pussy.
That's all right. Yes, it is. Nice.
So what happened with the verdict? What did Dom say?
I won.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, yeah. Dom said it was funny because Dom started with, because Dom also goes off on the clients. So he was, he was the wigger. He's like, you know, listen here, Eminem, blah, 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 da, 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 da. So then when it I had thought, because you prepare your stuff. So I had Eminem lined up. But once he took it, I was like, well, I can't say Eminem. And I go, Your Honor, with all due respect, Eminem, or as I would like to say, K-Fed. You know, like, nice. I just kind of tagged this thing. Man, it was so much fun.
When did this happen? How many years
ago? This was a few years ago. We filmed it, and then it came out on DirecTV. I still have a DVD of it, and I was so proud of it. I was like, I mean, I don't care.
Maybe it needs to be reintroduced now. Maybe like a few years ago.
No,
maybe
they're ready for it. I just think like they run into some sort of like, I don't know if it's like a money issue or what.
Yeah.
But you know, somebody like Comedy Central just pick it up.
I think some of the, and I'm not like really in with Comedy Central. I've only done like one or two things with them. But it just seems like they have a very narrow view of what would appeal to the mass audience.
I think that they feel like, you know, they've got a younger demographic. So I think like, you know, a show like Workaholics, for example, you know, I guess it started online and then they got picked up. So it almost behooves you to do some stuff online.
Get your following.
Get a little following going. Show that you can do it and make it funny and edgier. You know, like, I think Tosh.0 is funny. I think it's funny. And I think it's great for that audience. I mean, that audience is eating that up because it's, you know, few minutes. It's funny. It's like,
short attention span.
Short attention span, done. Yeah, yeah. So,
and it's stuff we all already see on YouTube anyway. It's like this kind of crap.
Yeah. So I think they know their audience. I mean, you know, the more you look around, the more you start realizing that these networks really just stick with, you know, it's not about what's the best show. It's about what's the best show that will fit our programming.
Well, let me ask you this, because I think you and I are probably about the same age.
Yeah.
I won't out
you. I'll be 41 next week.
Oh, my God. Happy early birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah. And 41, you don't look anything
seriously.
Close to 41.
Botox, detox, pre-tox.
Nice.
I did some pre-tox, which is before Botox, before you can get it, you get pre-tox. That's fantastic.
I've got chicken tox.
Chicken tox?
Chicken
yes.
Tox.
Yes.
Do you find, because you said you've been doing about 15 years?
Yeah.
Okay, I've been doing like, this just hit my 20th year for my first open mic.
Yeah.
And it just seems to me like this is the only business where the better you get at it and the more experience you have, the less appealing you are to break out.
Well, you know, there's a couple of things. I think, first of all, you know, there's a period when you're kind of the new kid on the block and people are like, oh, wow, why haven't I seen you? You know, like they get all excited. And you know how it is. One person thinks you're hot, then everybody wants you. If they don't think you're hot, then nobody wants you. You know?
Right.
And then stand-up is different because you become seasoned. You become more and more seasoned. And you know, people can see, oh, wow, this guy's polished, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's our job as stand-ups to just keep pushing ourselves and keep creating. Like, I listen to Maron's podcast a lot, WTF, mm-hmm. and he did one with Brian Regan, which was interesting because Regan, you know, he's very funny and he's very successful. And Maron was asking him about, like, has he ever done, has Regan had any TV shows, you know, and he said, you know, I've sold a few shows, but it hasn't gone kind of past the script stage. And I actually have gone through that myself. I've sold two shows now, and it hasn't gone past. We've written the script, hasn't gone past it. And I just think that, you know, you just got to keep creating. Because the beauty of it is, with stand-up, we can start to build a fan base, and you can almost subsist without the approval of a network or a director or somebody saying, I want to put you in my thing. You could go, I mean, Russell Peters is a great example. This guy sells, you know, I don't know, like he's one of the top money makers. He makes like 10, 20 million a year.
Gosh.
But Hollywood doesn't know what to do with him. He doesn't need Hollywood.
Right.
You know, so the beauty of someone like Russell is if he decides to make a movie, he can go out and just make a movie and hopefully it comes out and it does well and then they pay attention. So it's kind of like, you know, once you're no longer the new kid It's like, you gotta, I think it's, and I keep telling this to people, and I keep telling myself, it's like, you just gotta create your own stuff, mm-hmm. and just take advantage of what you can do. You know, like this, even the podcast is a great thing. You never know what's going to be something. Maron is a great example. Maron, with his podcast, you know, it took off because he was loving doing it. He got really good at it. He's really good at it. I enjoyed listening to those. And so, like, I've given up worrying about
somebody else trying to find a place for you, and you're just
finding a place for me. I mean, I've got, you know, like I said, I'll continue to go out and pitch. I'll continue to go on auditions. I'm not going to stop. But the beauty is knowing that, hey, whether you guys pick me or not, I've got a show tonight, and I've got a book I'm working on, and I've got a movie I'm producing, and I've got a
and I'm going to the North.
Remember what it is. It's 99% of it is about having fun.
Totally.
Oh, yeah. If you find a way to have fun, then the rest is easy. So it's like I did a short a little while back called it was called Go Home Arab. It was it was me, Ian Edwards, and Ahmed Ahmed.
Okay.
And it was great because I wrote it, and I cast them in it, and we had some fun improvising, and it was a fun day. We shot it all in a day. I had so much fun just hanging out on the set with guys that I know, and I was like I wanted to actually originally do a whole web series based off of it, but just for whatever reason I just kind of let it go. But the more I think about it, whenever I've watched that clip online, I go, why don't I do this? Why don't I continue? And it's partially like just putting the budget together, but it doesn't take that much to go shoot, you know, 3 or 4 episodes. If you're doing a smart way, you know, shoot it in one location, you know, like $5-10 grand, you could probably shoot a bunch, get them out, and just have a blast, just have fun. And then you have product to show, and you also have the proof behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So when you go to a Comedy Central to pitch a show, you go, listen, this show is based off of this, blah, blah, blah. As a matter of fact, you can go online and check it out. We've got 10 episodes that came out, and we've had 1 million hits on those. Well, you know, then that means you got 100,000 hits on each without anyone else's help. And if they're funny, the Comedy Central's going to be like, oh, this is maybe something I should pay attention to.
Amen. Yeah. Did you see the speech that Patton Oswalt gave to the Just for Laughs Festival this
week? I didn't see that one.
Brilliant, brilliant speech where he's basically talking to the gatekeepers, and he goes, guess what, guys? We don't need you anymore to be the ones to let us in.
Yeah.
Remember, we have these. And he holds up his iPhone. He goes, we have these, which means that we can record anything we want at any given time, and we make our own fan base.
Yeah.
So just pay attention to that the game's changing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's like one of the big like hurdles for me personally is that I was when I was coming up, it was still about them finding you and them giving it to you you know, and you just waiting your turn. And now, you know, Patton's right, and you're right bring that up, like it's all changed now. And it's like, I think the guys coming up now, and even you guys like you who recognize that are you know, grabbing that bull by the horns.
You have to, man. It's like, I mean it's just so evolving so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't think you do something going, oh, this will be a hit. You do something because you go, I think this is funny.
Yeah.
And
I've got some
guys
and we're having a good time. Let's just do it. Mm-hmm. And you might mess up the first few times, but eventually you get it. I mean, I'm trying to do a bit on this, but it's like Gangnam style, you know. This guy, people are killing themselves trying to come up with something that'll get 1 million hits on YouTube, and this guy busts something out. It's not even in English. I thought you had to at least be in English.
What the hell is Gangnam?
No one even knows
anyway.
What this guy's talking about. He's got 1 billion hits. You know, people are like, "What the fuck?
Oh my god!
I've been trying to get 1 million. This guy got 1 billion.
Do you know what Gangnam is Korean for?
It's that like area, like the Beverly Hills kind of Korea.
That's doggy.
Huh?
Doggy
style. That makes sense. There you go. That's
it's gangbang style. Is what he's trying to say, but he's
you know
can't
what's amazing
right.
is kids love it. Like my daughter loves it. There's videos online of little babies.
Oh, dude, the little baby in the car seat. That one.
The baby in the car seat is hilarious.
So adorable.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just because you know he's got the right idea. It's got
it's catchy.
It's a very catchy tune, and then he is the underdog. He's this pudgy little guy that nobody cares about with this silly little dance.
He's like
we like that.
It's like the Korean Ron Jeremy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he's just
Karan Jeremy. which would then be the Muslim Ron Jeremy. Karan Jeremy.
Nice.
That's fine.
Yeah. No, but you know, but how many hilarious. People have sat there in some room and thought like that? Like, we need to have this catchy hook, and we need the guy, and then they try it, and it doesn't work. And this guy just puts it on it. I mean, whatever it took to make it work. But my point is, don't do it to succeed. Do it because you love it.
Amen to that. God, best piece of advice.
Yeah, I think like success follows love.
Yeah, yeah. Just and end of the day, if you had a great time doing it, then whether something comes of it or not is not as big of a deal.
Because you just enjoyed yourself. You put out love.
You had a great time and you want to do it again.
Yeah. Amen.
Well, I think that's why we got into doing what we do.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
We didn't get into stand up because, well, this should, you know, this is a way to pay the bills. We want to have fun.
There's no other thing I want to do. I really don't want to, there's nothing else.
How old were you when you, so you said 15 years ago was your first time doing stand up?
15 years ago, I tried it when I was in my earlier 20s and then I didn't know what to do with it. And then I was in grad school, yada, yada. And then I ended up, it wasn't until I was 26 when I really was like, I'm going to do this.
26,
that was when
really?
I started too.
Yeah,
26.
So I was kind of running around for a while, not really, you know. I could have started when I was, you know, in my earlier 20s. Sometimes I wish I had the chance to start. Like, I wanted to be like Eddie Murphy. Like, when I was a big fan of his, so I was like, I want to be on SNL even younger than him. But when it came time to go to college and study acting, my, you know, Persian parents were like, no, you should be a lawyer.
Of course.
They talked me in another direction.
Oh, yeah.
What do they think now?
Well, my mom's a huge fan, and my dad is dead, so that doesn't...
Oh,
no, my father passed away a few years ago. As a matter of fact, he's buried right near here, so I went and visited him today. It was kind of cool to go. It's a peaceful place. This whole... I don't know if you guys have ever had to deal with funerals and stuff, but it's the weirdest... I saw Paul Rodriguez do a bit on it one time. It was really funny, but it's the weirdest kind of situation because you're sitting there, and it's like a loved one. It is a loved one. And these people, the way they're like car salesmen. They're like, well, you know, this casket starts at $1,000, but if you really like the guy, you might want to get him the $10,000 one. And you're like, oh, Jesus, you know, like, you guys take credit cards? You know, like, they just, it's like, you know, we have this one plot of land, it's in the corner. But if it was he a good dad? You might want to get him in the dinner. And you're like, oh, God.
Because so you like trees, you would want him out of the $10,000 tree,
yeah,
wouldn't you?
Yeah,
come
it's
on.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And I keep forgetting. I really want to go and, like, put in some will somewhere, you know, when I pass away, please just burn, put ashes.
Yeah.
$800.
Yeah.
You're
nice.
Done. $500, $800, something like that. It's none of this.
Throw me in a potato sack and throw me to the sea.
Just burn me and throw me out.
The fish will sleep.
I'm going to remember that, by the way.
I'm serious. Or something. You know what? A friend of mine just told me her aunt, who was like really old, passed away. And she said the best thing that they did was, she goes, her aunt had signed something that she donated her whole body to science. And she goes, it was the best thing. She goes, there wasn't even a funeral because it was like a service, like, you know, to celebrate her life. But she goes, you know, Stanford Medical Center or whatever just took her. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Your
body's
used for positive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what else was your body to be used for? I mean, your soul departed already, so you're good.
These fucking casket guys making out like bandits.
Unbelievable. On a wood box that you're never going to see again.
Yeah, how do I know they don't go in there at night, dig out the nice one, put them in a bad one, put it back down, and recycle the old one? They probably do.
They never know.
That's true.
Grave robbing sons of bitches.
It is. It's like a used car lot.
It's really bad.
I think people just like know. As far as like having somebody buried in a plot versus donating their body or ashes or whatever, I think people like kind of like having that idea that they know they could still in some way visit where that person is.
I agree with that, but at the same time, like if you put them out to sea or something, it's like, you know, their spirit goes away. You know, like, because I just went there today and I was like, wow, if I dug it out right now, like his bones might be, I mean, he'd still be there. And I was like, that's kind of weird to me. Even.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather not even have that. I mean, it's crazy. And then you look like the headstone. I mean, it is. It's like it's a total business. They're like, you know, the first line is this much. The second line costs this much. Like some people had like a whole paragraph. I was like, how much did they spend on their headstone? I swear it was like, you know, Mary Louise was a good lady in her teens. And then later on she was – I was like, you're telling a whole story. I was like, just stick with something. You know, nice and simple. Beloved father. Just move on.
I want my credits listed on my tombstone.
Credits is
like,
good.
Please welcome. Yeah, please welcome your
– He really was the last comic standing.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
For your headliner this evening, he's been seen on Comedy Central.
Your IMDb should be there. It's your IMDb.
Did I seriously just get the light? That's what it should say.
Yeah. It should have your, it should
I
have
see the light.
I
see the light.
I see the light. I got to go.
Nice. There you go. Nice.
Nod.
That's
nice.
What it's going to be. I see the light. I got to go.
Yeah. There you go. I got to go.
You all been fun.
Beautiful. I love it. You guys should do comedy. Oh, wait. That's great.
Nice.
I love it. I was thinking you could put your website, you know, for upcoming dates. Check it out.
You will be appearing in just, ghostly form.
And then just laugh stub. It just says heaven.
Yeah.
Or hell, a.k.a. Fargo.
Yeah, yeah. That's
funny.
Silly.
Sheboygan.
And And you're married too, right?
I'm married. We got two young kids. We got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. So our house is pretty fun, man.
I know, like, when I got married, like, it's as cliche as it is, my writing suddenly took this really interesting shift.
Absolutely. Because what happened was a lot of the stuff I was doing before was just like my ethnicity, my background, blah, 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 mom, dad. Then during the Bush administration and like the war with Iraq, a lot of like political stuff, blah, blah, bum. And then marriage and then the kids. The kids were huge. The kids, it's like all the time something new is coming up. And now I'm going more into the marriage stuff too, like being married. And it's interesting because it is. It's impossible to avoid almost because that's what's on your mind. I think ultimately I was just saying this the other night at the Comedy Store. I was saying that stand up is like therapy. Like we're up there.
It is. Totally.
Absolutely. You know
what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah.
So it's great. Like you just whatever's on your mind, and that's what's on your mind when you're married, you have kids. Things related to them is what's on your mind.
Now,
right?
do you find yourself? Because like I know when I'm coming up with ideas or whatever, and sometimes an idea will come to me, and I'm like, have I heard that before? Because it's like it seems like every aspect of the marriage or of the kids has been done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
it's like,
yeah, yeah.
Okay, this is a done premise, but what's my take on it?
You know? Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the hardest parts. I wish there were like a reference you could go to. Because like, and then the question becomes when I go, oh, this is one minor joke I think I've heard in a bigger thing that I'm doing. Do I, like, can I still do this? Like I'm trying to do a bit about... and I'm sure people have done this about like shopping because my wife really just like picks out my clothes now and like tells me what to wear and it's weird. You guys, you could go through that.
The Converse that he's wearing, I ordered that he must wear them. I mean, he looks so good in them.
Good
Come
for
on.
You. I love that. And my wife hates my Converse, and that just shows you that they have no elite. They
no
have
elite.
No. They don't know what they got their own thing.
Right. Yeah.
See, so I'm the agenda. Chuck Taylor lover, and I required them.
So basically, like I was just trying to do this bit about like how you know the way I shop now is I gotta if I'm not with her, I gotta take a picture of it and text it to her and get approval.
Yep,
you know,
yep.
So I'm doing this whole bit, and then I go because I know that if I were to not and I showed up. I go, you know, my way out, she'll be standing at the door like a hockey goalie waiting for me. You know, you're going out like that. I guess I'm not. I go back and I change. But I was like, I think I've heard several comedians talk about the whole woman at the door asking you, are you going out like that? So my question became, do I do the bit or not? But then I added a little bit more to it, which I said, because that was just one part of the bigger joke.
Mm-hmm.
And then I added a bigger part, which is true. I said, sometimes I get cocky and try to dress the kids. And then we show up, the three of us, and then she's like, are you guys going out like that? And I'm like, I guess we're not. And then as we're walking back, I turn to my son, and I'm like, I told you she's not going to like the jeans. And before that, I've already established that my son and daughter speak Spanish better than English because they spend more time with our nanny than with us. So I go, I told you she's not going to like the jeans. And my son's like, policia. And I'm like, I don't even know what you're saying. You know, so it became this bigger bit. I go, you know what? I'm going to keep it until somebody comes up to me and goes, hey, that's so-and-so's bit. Because I don't know if it is so-and-so's bit. And these are experiences that come from my own life.
Yeah, you know, I don't, I'm sure there's been some other comics who have done, like you said, variations on that.
Yeah.
But I think if it comes from a personal place...
That matter what, it's yours.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure. Like, I did, matter of fact, I was half asleep one night, and I came up with this idea, and I actually woke up and recorded it in my phone, and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I came up with a joke. But the basic premise is that when I was single, all my married friends would complain about their wives. It would always be the exact same thing they'd complain about, and I didn't believe every woman could annoy their man in the exact same way. I thought it was just married guys telling ghost stories about marriage to freak out single guys, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'd do like this act out, like a marriage guy going, gather around, single boys, I'm going to tell you a scary story.
Right.
And then the bit is like, here's the scary story of the woman who cries for no reason.
Right.
And yeah, I've heard guys do bits about women who, like, you know, they're always crying to try to make you feel guilty, but never in with that kind of twist to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of how I validated doing the bit.
Absolutely,
keeping
it
original,
that works.
You know?
Sure. It's about the execution of it. You
yeah.
know?
If you think about it, it's like music. Like every note and note pattern has, for the most part, been thought of by somebody else. But with that note pattern. it's different people's lyrics and words and the way that they play the notes that makes it their own. They don't, the notes aren't owned. So unless you're verbatim taking somebody's verbatim bit and the exact cadence, everybody, I think, great minds, all comics have similar mindset when it comes to coming up with ideas. It's part of life. We all deal with marriage and kids and things like that. But exactly, it's like music. If you change it to your notes, your cadences.
It's if it's coming from your experience, then I think you're pretty safe. Unless, like I was saying, somebody comes up and goes, hey, you know, Eddie Murphy did the whole, you know, Aunt Bunny barbecue thing. You know, you're like, oh, okay, you know.
Wait, Eddie Murphy did an Aunt Bunny barbecue?
Yeah.
Damn, shit, you were going to do that tomorrow. I know.
Damn it.
I'm sorry.
Damn it. Hopefully nobody does a bit about seven dirty words you can't say on TV.
No, I've never heard of that. Never heard of that one.
Yeah, good, because I got this bit. It's going to kill, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, yeah, it's
very,
great.
Very excited.
Yeah.
I was going to smash a watermelon, but I don't know if that's been done before. Is watermelons?
I think I heard one guy, but only one guy. So you could do it.
And
You know, be on the safe side. Use a cantaloupe.
Definitely use
a cantaloupe.
Yeah. Oh, silliness.
Well, we're about I know you got to get going and everything, man.
Yeah, man.
And,
thanks for having me.
But no problem. But before we go, this is a little part of the show called The Skippy Green Show.
Oh, great.
It's The Skippy Green Show.
Maz Gibrani, as I live and breathe, sitting here at this piece of shit podcast.
Happy,
how are you?
Happy to be here, Skippy.
Very good. All right, Maz, are you ready for this?
Yes.
Are you prepared?
I've been waiting.
Have you been with bated breath?
Bated breath.
She baits my breath a lot, too.
I bet you, yeah. She likes that she bait.
I can smell your bait on my breath right now.
She's a master baiter.
Oh, yeah.
Breath. All right. Answer the following question in 10 words exactly.
Done.
Not 11? Not 9. 10 words. You
coming
ready?
At you.
If you could fuck any woman throughout history in the back of a car from the 80s, which woman and which car and why?
I would fuck Cleopatra in a Datsun because why not?
Beautiful.
Great.
That's a man who is not in denial.
Oh, nice.
Hello.
He's in the Datsun.
Hello. Just make sure she's not on a pyramid. Ooh. Hello. That was... Ooh. What? Too soon? Too soon?
Oh, Maz, dude, thanks so much for coming by, man. And people can check you out at MazGibrani.com.
MazGibrani, MazGibrani.com.
All right. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the show again. Again, Allison, DirtyGuitarGirl.com. Check me out, FlipIsFunny.com. All the great tour dates. Thank you again, guys. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Yes.
Talking about whatever on their mind.